Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, how record labels kept the money flowing in 2020. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the first speakers were announced for this year's online edition of the Great Escape Conference.
Yeah, while Setlist was on its slightly extended holiday at the start of the year, it was announced that unfortunately, because of pesky COVID continuing to keep the live industry in lockdown / shutdown for a little bit longer, there won't be an in-person edition of Great Escape this year by the seaside in Brighton. That will return in 2022. However, the good news is, yeah, as you say, an online edition of The Great Escape is happening this year over 2 days in what would be Great Escape Week. And during the day, we'll be presenting an online version of our conference. There'll be the CMU strands as normal, where we'll be delving into all the latest trends and developments, presenting you with some CMU insights and having some debates. There will be lots of partner panels presented by partners from across the music industry. TG Elevate will return. That's our professional development program for early career music professionals and music makers. And there'll be some Elevate webinars to access as well. All of this happening in the day. And then in the evening, there'll be loads of channels to tune into where we will be showcasing great new artists from all over the globe with online showcases presented by various industry partners again, as well as showcases putting the spotlight on new music from certain key countries. All of that is happening as part of the online Great Escape this year. You can already get your tickets to take part. But yeah, as you say, the big announcement from us, on the festival side, a whole load of artists were announced as well. But on the conference side, we announced three of the keynote interviews that will be taking place this year.
Yes, so we will be speaking to Merck Mercuriadis of the Hypnosis Songs Fund, who is, he's who everyone's been talking about in the last year. He's been making not just music industry news, but appearing in the wider media as he embarks on a process of buying up lots of generally heritage artist catalogues, although not entirely heritage artists, and then getting finance people to invest in those catalogues. And his theory is basically that song rights catalogues are more predictable than gold and therefore are a better investment.
Yeah, so as you say, Merck has been very much in the news over the last year plus, really, and obviously so many deals with so many big name artists and songwriters over the last 18 months, it almost became a bit of a running joke in the Sydney Daily, didn't it? There was that month where it was almost a deal a day that we were reporting on. So yeah, we're going to be talking to Merck as part of our keynote interview programme. Also, Nadia Khan, who you may know because of the Women in Control initiative that she has been running in the last few years, about empowering women who are working in the music industry, whether that's they are music makers themselves or they're working on the industry side. She has actually been putting out some really interesting studies in recent months, one looking at the makeup of the boards of all the music industry trade organizations when it comes to things like diversity, another one looking at diversity in the radio sector. So she will be joining us to talk about all of that, but also a very successful artist manager and label owner as well, and currently chair of the Association of Independent Music in the UK. Lots of really interesting stuff to talk about managing artists and building careers around artists in the 21st century. So all of that, we're going to squeeze in to the 25, 30 minutes that we will have with Nadia as part of our keynote interviews. And then one more we announced this week.
Yes, sticking with artist management, we'll be speaking to Wendy Ong from Tap Music, which is a UK artist management company, although she heads up the US branch of the company. And she'll be talking about managing and marketing artists, both in the pandemic year just gone and opportunities in the still quite strange year coming up.
Yeah, so Wendy, prior to joining Tap, had various marketing positions at a bunch of major labels, also had a stint at Roc Nation in a marketing role before joining Tap. And Tap Music, as you say, London-based management company, even though Wendy heads up the US side, I mean, they work with artists like Dua Lipa and Ellie Goulding, so lots of really interesting projects to talk to Wendy about. So those are the first three of our keynote interviews, which will sit within the CMU program in amongst all the panel discussions and case studies and insight sessions. We've got more of those interviews to announce in the weeks ahead, as well as all of the panels and the sessions, and it will all be sitting within a virtual conference platform where you'll also be able to access some on-demand webinars and resources and do meetings and networking. It's going to be really, really good. So you should go to the Great Escape website, find out more about that, and get your tickets for the first ever online edition of the Great Escape, which is taking place this May. But even though that is very exciting and you should all take note on all of that, we ought to admit that that is not actually what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on we're going to be discussing the Ivers Academy's new campaign to get record labels to pay songwriters. But first, the IFPI last week published its annual report on global record industry revenues, and, well, if they weren't just up yet again, the industry managed to increase its income 7.4% year on year to $21.6 billion, thanks largely to the continued streaming boom, which made up for the fact that some other revenue streams dropped like a stone last year.
Yeah, so this is the annual stats pack from the IFPI, the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry. We talk about it every year here on Setlist.
I think this is everyone's highlight of the year, this episode, isn't it? People love numbers. 92% of Setlist listeners love stats.
Of course they do. We could do a stats edition pretty much every week on Setlist these days, because all the trade organisations around the world, they drip feed their statistics, and each country publishes stats, and often in lots of countries, the record labels publish stats, but then the collecting society issues stats and the chart company issues stats. And there are so many stats floating around. And generally we don't hone in on all of those because, well, even though 92% of Setlist listeners like stats, it would be a bit of an overkill if we did it every week.
It might be, yes.
But this is the one that aggregates all of the stats for the record industry. So these are recorded music revenues. All the money that comes in through record companies, music distributors, and the record industry's collecting societies around the world. And because it is global, it's all the various national stats put together. They do some maths. It is worth looking at these, A, because it's just interesting to know what were the big figures for last year in the record industry, but also to look at the trends. I mean, the trends, there's nothing really new happening in this set of stats for 2020 that we haven't seen in recent years. Except, of course, it was COVID year. And as you say, and we've talked about before on set lists, COVID has been interesting for the music industry. Because if we split the music industry up into its constituent parts, for the live industry, we know COVID has been catastrophic. The live industry has now been in shutdown for basically a year in much of the world, and the COVID shutdown continues. We're hoping things will start to return to normal at some point this year. But for the live side of the business, it has been a catastrophe. And there are other parts of the music industry that have been hit as well. High street retail, so record shops for a time, studios for a time. Songwriters and music publishers also take a hit when there's no live music, because they usually get a cut of ticket sales when live shows happen, because their songs are being performed in public. The sync business took a hit because the film studios paused for a while, ad agencies put their ad campaigns on hold. So, you know, other parts of the music industry beyond live have been hit by COVID. But, of course, the one revenue stream which was not hit by COVID at all was premium streaming, Spotify-style streaming. And, of course, it was already the case in 2019 that for the record industry, that was the single biggest revenue stream overall. So therefore, the record industry, as these stats confirm, was basically COVID immune. I mean, we knew that, but we now have some figures on the table to prove it. Because although we had some revenue streams going down, the biggest revenue stream for the record industry, premium streaming, continued to grow. But shall we begin with the stats that were down before we get on to the streaming stats?
Yes, just always start on a downer. You know, I think that's what people want. Anyway, as you say, broadcast and public performance of music was down, and that's been a growth revenue stream for many years now. So that's a bit of a shock to the system, and that was down 10.1% in 2020 as a result of the pandemic. Sync took a hit as well, was down 9.4%, and the revenues from the sale of physical media was down 4.7%, although that's mainly due to CDs, because the vinyl revival continues, and worldwide revenues from vinyl were up 23.5%.
Yeah, it's interesting with the physical sales, because they were down in 2020, and we can assume that COVID had some impact, because in many countries at various points over the last 12 months, the high street has been closed, which affects high street music retail. That said, of course, Physical sales at large, really we're talking about CD sales, I mean, have been in decline for, what, 20 years now?
Yeah.
So it's hard to know how much of that decline is just the decline that would have happened anyway, and whether or not any of it could be directly attributed to COVID. And you could almost see that, I mean, here in the UK, for example, when the record shops had to close on the high street, so many of those record shops worked really hard to find new ways to get music to their customers, and lots of independent retailers, which hadn't been that prolific with online sales before, I think because they assumed that it was so hard to compete with Amazon online that they should put their focus on their shops. But because their shops were shut, because they had no choice about that, they started realizing actually often within their town or their city, they had a really loyal community, and they started doing local deliveries and stuff like that. And I think that helped skew towards vinyl, because the sorts of people who are going to be loyal to their local record shops are probably more likely to skew to vinyl than CD. So in a weird sort of way, it might be that, although it was a massive headache for all of those record shops, and the people who worked in them had to work incredibly hard last spring and last summer, that maybe that helped slow down the existing decline in physical. But yeah, overall, CD sales down, sufficiently so that physical sales at large were down, although the vinyl revival does continue.
But it wasn't vinyl that kept the revenues up. As you say, it was streaming, and really premium streaming, but streaming overall was up 19.9% to $13.4 billion worldwide. And on a panel at the launch of the IFPI's report, it was noted that there's an increasingly diverse range of digital platforms now which fall under that streaming category. So user-generated content and video sharing apps and gaming and fitness apps and live streaming services has particularly grown in the last year. And they all contribute to that $13.4 billion. Although in the main, it's still the premium music services like Spotify and Apple Music that really bring in the bulk of that cash.
Yeah, so the way that IFPI currently break down the figures, they do split out ad-funded streaming from premium streaming, and then actually download is still in there as a category because somebody somewhere is still downloading music. So if we take all the money that came in to the global record industry last year, then of all of that money, 46% is coming from premium streaming services. So Spotify Premium, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Tidal, Deezer, etc. Then 16.2% is coming from free services. So that's Spotify Free, but that also includes things like YouTube and the other social media that make use of music. And then downloads is accounting for 5.8% of the total pie. So you can see that premium streaming is by far the biggest, although a lot of the growth in the next few years is possibly going to come more from the YouTube, TikTok, Triller, Instagram type services, which at the moment are not specifically broken out. I thought it was quite interesting, as you say, at the panel that they had with various label representatives to launch this report, they talked a lot about the TikToks and, you know, music happening within Fortnite and all the opportunities in those sorts of spaces. Most of that revenue, I think, would sit under the ad-supported category because most of those platforms are not subscription-based. They are ad-supported platforms. But it is actually quite hard to figure out where are those services actually sitting in these stats. And it wouldn't surprise me if ultimately they don't break it down further. Because, I mean, there was a time in these IFPI stats where we just had digital income. And then they broke it up between downloads and streams. And then they broke streams up between ad-funded and premium. So maybe down the line, we'll start having sort of TikTok-type apps broken out, money coming in from gaming and live streaming. I mean, it's still hard to work out quite how that's working, particularly on the recorded side. But yeah, it was interesting that although in the panel discussion, they were keen to talk about all of these newfangled services that are bringing in money to the record industry or will be bringing in money to the record industry in the years ahead, when you actually look at the figures, by far the biggest revenue generator is subscription streaming. But that's good news, as we've already said, for the record industry, because that was the one which was not hit by COVID at all. That continued to grow and ensured that despite the declines in public performance, in sync, in physical, etc., overall, the record industry had a really good 2020.
Now, you mentioned that various organisations around the world drip feed their figures across the year, so there's always stats coming out. Although the BPI in the UK this year decided to put their stats out at the same time as the IFPI, which is an interesting choice. And those stats did reflect some of the global trends. So total revenues were up in 2020, although not by as much as the global figure. And that growth was not at the same level as it was in 2019. So in 2020, total UK revenues were up by 3.8% to £1.118 billion, although they were up by 7.3% in 2019. So that does show some slowing in the growth last year. Again, that growth was really down to streaming revenues, which grew by 15.4% to £736.5 million. Sync was down by more than 25%. Public performance was down by a bit over 22%, 22.5%, both as a result of COVID, like with the global figures. Again, physical sales were in decline, but that decline was only 2.6%, and that was helped again by a boost in vinyl sales, which were up by more than 30% compared to a drop of 18.5% of CD sales. Although the BPI were keen to point out that CDs are still bringing in £115 million a year and are therefore a key revenue stream despite their continued decline. That said, vinyl is now on course to overtake revenues for CDs for the first time since 1987.
So yeah, a lot of similarities between the global figures from the IPI and the BPI's figures for the UK in 2020, certainly in terms of trends, even if UK growth was not quite as significant as global growth, partly because of global growth, some of those key emerging markets are ever more important as every year goes by in the total pile of cash increasing. And I mean, places like South Korea and China and quite a lot of Latin American markets, particularly important in driving that growth. Although, generally speaking, things were up in the US, Canada and Europe as well, although often not to quite the same extent.
Now, if you thought we'd finished with the stats, and I know 92% of you are hoping that we haven't, so sorry to the 8%. There was one other load of stats that came out last week, although these didn't come from an official music industry body. These came from former chief economist at Spotify, Will Page.
Yeah, so this final set of stats actually relates to 2019, whereas all the stats that we have talked about so far relate to 2020. So you might be saying, well, hang on a second, why, given that we've already done the IFPI and the BPI stats 2020, are we now looking at a study that is focused back on 2019? But what's really interesting with this study that Will Page does, and he's done it for a few years now, in fact, he started it when he was still working at Spotify, is that IFPI, BPI, all the stats we've spoken about so far here on the podcast, those are record industry figures. That's the money that comes in to the record industry through record companies, music distributors, and the record industry's collecting societies. But of course, you have the whole second side of the music copyright industry, the publishing business, the songs business, and then a whole load of other income comes in to songwriters and music publishers on the other side of the industry. Now, in the autumn, we get another report, like the IFPI report from an organisation called SISAC, that basically collates stats from all of the songwriter collecting societies around the world. And in a way, the SISAC report, even though it comes out a bit later in the year, is sort of the song publishing equivalent of the IFPI report. Except it only actually records money that flows through the collective licensing system on the song side. Now, that's a lot of the money because collective licensing is employed much more on the song side of the business, but it's not all the money because most sync deals outside of the TV industry and in the US, in the TV industry, most sync deals begin with direct deals negotiated by music publishers, and the money from those deals does not flow through a collecting society. With Anglo-American repertoire, an ever-increasing amount of streaming income doesn't flow through the collective licensing system. Some does, but a significant portion does not. Not all production music goes through the collective anymore. So even if you have the IFPI stats and the SISAC stats, there are still some gaps in the wider music rights industry. Actually, there's also a little bit of double accounting in the IFPI stats and the SISAC stats for reasons we won't go into. So what Will Page does every year is he takes the stats from IFPI, he takes the stats from SISAC, he pulls in some statistics from elsewhere and some other research companies, and then he puts together a study which is attempting to give you the value of the wider music rights industry. Not just the record industry, not just the publishing sector, the whole thing, with as few gaps in the figures as possible. And he's actually got a book coming out quite soon. So whereas in the past, he's often published the results of this study with various different magazines and websites, this year he's put it on his own website to help promote his new book. But as I say, although they're 2019 figures, it is sometimes interesting to get the complete picture of the value of music copyright at large, not just the record industry or the song money that flows through collecting societies.
According to his study, in 2019, that wider market was worth $31.6 billion, up $2.1 billion or 7% on 2018. And whereas in 2019, streaming started to account for more than half of recorded music revenues, that hasn't happened in the wider market yet, although only just. So according to Will Page's stats, streaming accounted for 47% of overall revenues.
Yeah, and he added that he would expect it to pass the 50% point for music rights at large in 2020, not least because of the dip in those other revenue streams we've already talked about as a result of COVID, which will actually have a bigger impact on the publishing side of the business than the recorded side of the business. So as always, we will link to our reports on all of these stats in the show notes for this edition of Setlist. We'll also link to the PDFs of the reports that you can download, or articles like Will Page's blog post on his study. We'll provide all the links you need if you're interested in those stats. And apparently, according to Andy, most of you are. Then you can just take our word for it. And these could be the only stats you consume in 2020 in the music industry. Or you can go and read up more and look at some pretty bar charts, if that's the sort of thing that gets you excited.
Now, coinciding with the launch of the IFPI's big stats pack last week, as well as the BPI's own stats, artists and songwriters like MNEK, Amy Wodge, Ross Golan, Jess Glynn, Giorgio Moroder, Dan Bastille and Andrew Lloyd Webber were among 300 signatories on an open letter published by the Ivers Academy, launching a new campaign called #PaySongwriters, which calls on record labels to better compensate songwriters for their work.
Yeah, so obviously we've just talked about how in the music rights industry, we have the two sides of the business, the recorded side and the song side. And we know, because of the parliamentary inquiry into the economics of streaming that's been going on for a few months in the UK now, that one of the arguments presented by the songwriting community, so the Ivers Academy's membership, during that inquiry and over the last year, as the debate around the streaming business has become more prolific, or indeed for years now, for people who've been paying attention, what songwriters have often been saying is that the streaming boom is great. The record industry is in growth because of the streaming boom. Look, we've got an IFPI report to prove that's true on a global basis. We've got a BPI report to prove that's true on a UK basis. But what songwriters are saying is that they are yet to really see the benefit of the streaming boom. And so it's great that the record industry is in growth, but what about the songwriters? And I suppose usually, traditionally, how the music industry works is record labels put out records. They have deals with artists who appear on those records. Then we have the other side of the business. We have the songwriters who have collecting societies and they have music publishers. And the two sides of the business go and grab the money they are due. And in the physical era, songwriters and publishers actually grabbed their cut of CD sale money off the record companies, because the record companies were the licensees of the songs when they were pressing up CDs, albeit it was all paid through the collective licensing system. With streaming, actually, in the main, the publishers and songwriters and their societies go directly to the services. So the labels put out records, they upload them to the streaming services, they get paid their royalties when the music streams, they share that money with the artists, and then it's for songwriters and publishers to then go and claim their money for the song royalties. But as we've discussed at length on Setlist, we know that for various reasons we won't go into, the royalties earned on the song side from streaming are considerably less than on the recorded side. There are also other reasons that we won't go into today why possibly, probably, songwriters are yet to see the benefit of streaming and the streaming boom. But basically what this campaign is saying is we as songwriters are not seeing the record growth that the record industry keeps bragging about. Actually, we're really struggling. We've been more hit by the COVID pandemic than the recorded side for various reasons. So we need the record industry to step up and help support songwriters. Really, we would like to change the streaming business model so that songwriters get a bigger cut of the pie. And that's what we're campaigning for. But in the short term, because that's probably going to take time, there's some things that labels could be doing right now to help those songwriters who, despite all the growth in the record industry, are actually struggling to make ends meet. And there were two main things, weren't there? Which was paying expenses when you get songwriters in the studio to work with your artists, and giving songwriters points on record releases, which would mean, as well as having ownership of any rights in the songs that they write, which are then released by labels, they would also get a cut of the recorded money via the label.
Yes. So specifically what the campaign is asking for is the introduction of a minimum and non-recoupable daily allowance of £75 or $120 to cover expenses when songwriters come into the recording studio to work with recording artists. And also it then calls for songwriters to receive 4 points on any master recordings of songs that they compose. And the letter says, "We can see that the record industry has experienced a huge upturn in revenues whilst songwriter profits have collapsed. In the past, songwriters have reaped great rewards for their work, and indeed many learnt their trade when this was still the norm. Sadly, no longer. 100,000 streams of a song will not cover the price of a cup of coffee. A songwriter could have many millions of streams and still be incapable of making rent in the cities where their work is done. Songwriters of the past risked their investment because there was a chance of returns if a song was used or indeed a hit. Without the possibility of those returns, where is the incentive? This question should cause us to reflect."
Meanwhile, the chair of the Ivors Academy Songwriter Committee, who has organised all of this, Helene Lindvall, added, "We know we have to fix streaming so it's fair, transparent and sustains the careers of the people that create the music we love. Structural reform is needed now more than ever, but in the meantime, there are a few quick and easy measures which could help songwriters get by until such time as reform is achieved. While labels enjoy record revenues from streaming, songwriters are struggling to pay rent. The Pay Songwriters campaign provides simple ways for the labels to support songwriters when it's needed most."
So yeah, this campaign has got quite a lot of press coverage over the last week, particularly as it's coincided with the IFPI's record industry figures. And I mean, you know, that was not a coincidence. And this is part of a wider campaign by the Ivors to ensure that songwriters get more fairly paid for their work in the streaming age as the way music is consumed changes.
Yeah, so as we said, and as it was said in the official statements, the ultimate aim is to increase the value of the separate song copyrights that these songwriters will always be cut into as a co-creator of the song. But because that's probably going to take time, and because songwriters are saying this is an urgent crisis almost, because lots of songwriters are really struggling, these are relatively simple solutions. Just paying expenses when you get songwriters into the studio, giving them points on the recording so that they can also earn on the recorded side as well as the song side. Simple measures. And a couple of indie labels have already signed up to this. So given that the campaign, the petition has got quite a lot of momentum going, quite a lot of press coverage, it'll be interesting to see whether other labels step forward and agree to make these payments to songwriters.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. Do remember to subscribe, rate and review and all that stuff. Email us if you have any questions or comments on anything we've discussed this week, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.